Blog Talk Radio.
Let's do it.
Radio.
Oh, yeah. I said, oh, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah. It's Empowerment Saturday. 65 days of motivation and personal empowerment. Just for you, it's your main man, Marvin Roan, and a crew coming to you live. Kevin and back on deck. Brother George, you want to watch this one with your mind, with the voice of Western culture. Now that I'll make part two. It's better love time. African-American commitment time. We got to do the work. No greater love. Welcome, brothers and sisters. Welcome, brothers and sisters. There's no greater love than for self and kind. I'm going to say that again. No greater love than for African-American community members loving themselves more than ever. You're probably asking yourself, why you say that, Marvin? Because we need it. If you know what's going on out in these streets and what our people are doing to each other, not to other people, we're not talking about that right now, just what are we doing to each other? We need to take a magnifying glass and start to really doing the hard look, the hard search, right? Detective work on ourselves to see what it is that we're doing, what's implanted in us that continues to have us to devour ourselves, to murder, kill ourselves, our children, our young people, to destruct and deteriorate our families. We got to change that. We do. We got to do the work of working on ourselves, and we got to get to work on doing that immediately. We do. Right. This show is about African-American empowerment. It's the things that we need to do, the commitments we need to make, and the work that we have to do in order to get some change. African-Americans, right, we know our history. We're going to have to really coalesce, collaborate, and work together to think about how we're going to do some work that needs to be done. Right, we got to rectify some situations immediately on our behavior, our conduct, who we think we are. Right, we're all over the place in many ways, but when it comes to our children, I need you to think about making a commitment. I don't care where you are on the earth in terms of your status, but we have to think about saving our babies. Right, you got to do something, and if you're of age now, you got to make a commitment to doing something. Right, and it just can't be giving money or saying you made it. That's over with. You got to go back and get somebody now. Harry Tubman it. Go back, reach down, reach back, reach in your pocket or reach down inside your heart and go and get somebody. You're going to have to get some children. We're going to have to get some families. We're going to have to get some family members, right? They say we can't save everybody, and that's true, but you can save somebody. And all you got to do is do the work. So how are we going to do it, P? We need a political agenda, right? We do. We do. We need a political agenda that really looks at how we're going to manage our situation here right where we are. And until things get better, we're going to have to figure out how to get better. We need politics, right? A political agenda, an African-American action plan that helps us to help ourselves, right? We need an economic agenda, an economic platform. That's the E. We need money to do some stuff. We need programs and institutions that define our own reality. And we need education. We need research. And we need materials, supplies, and substances that's going to help us out and not those ones that some of y'all think about. We need substance in terms of material resources to build buildings, for example, to supply our schools with materials that we need to educate our people, to develop STEM programs and all other programs to help support and educate and inspire our young people. Now, the A. That A is very powerful. That A is simply athletics, which is health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. Somebody got to do it. Somebody got to do it. Somebody got to get into working on themselves, your body, your health, and being able to manage and regulate your fitness so that you can do the work of working on yourselves. Next is C, cultural, relevant cultural programs that really do the work of helping us, like this program here and the program that we're going to have today. In terms of what Brother Akebulan is bringing to the table, right? Divorce Western culture. I can understand that, but you got to get a really complete, good, solid, sound understanding of what that is. And then lastly, it's DE, which is education, a well-rounded, comprehensive education that really gets us to looking at ourselves, the forward action that we need to take and when we need to do it and how we need to do it. So that is the peace concept.
Man,
understand.
Can
the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah,
I just,
man,
I
we
just
got
love
the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
I understand, it's so true. You know, I play it over and over again until you get it. Somebody did. Somebody called me and said, you know what? I finally got it, Marvin. Why'd you play that? Because we need institutions that define our own reality. Nobody else is going to do that for us. We have to do it for ourselves. We're going to have to. And now, before we get to anything else, we're going over to Brother George for the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. Brother George.
Yes, sir.
Hey, bring it.
All right. Now, for today's Kwanzaa principle, it's going to be near, which is purpose. To make as our collective vocation the building and developing of our community in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. The symbol and its name have become well known through the movie called Sankofa, and through numerous African-American artistic and commercial uses of the word. Literally, it means it's never too late to go back and fetch what has been lost. It has been used to encourage African-Americans to go back and reclaim our past, our heritage, and our ancient African wisdom. Through the knowledge of our past, we can gain a greater understanding of our purpose in the present and our destiny as individuals and as people. For the Willie Lynch segment today, I'm going to read a piece out of a book called Black People Invented Everything. And this is by a brother named Dr. Dots. And he's speaking right here about George Washington Carver, the legacy of G.W. Carver. Carver's inventions helped the country at a time when both halves were struggling and on sour terms in the wake of the Civil War. Carter saved the industries of the North with his factory-centered products, and especially peanut oil as a lubricant. Meanwhile, he saved the South by getting them to switch from single-crop farming to raising the many plants he found ingenious uses for in places like the factories of the North. Do you see what he did? Carver saved the whole country. He brought the North and South together by showing them how to make money off each other. Carver did more for white folks than most white folks. But Carver was a black man who knew his history. He worked at Booker T. Washington's Tuskegee Institute, which taught black men the technical skills they needed to build homes, farms, machinery, and infrastructure. There, Carver was studying plant genetics, and the secret language of nature, teaching black men to be master craftsmen of the natural world. Now, George Washington Carver did a great deal more than that. But he was just given an instance where he saved this country. He saved After the Civil War, the North and the South were very bitter, similar to what's going on today. They're starting to get bitter with each other again. And so he came up with a way to take their attention away from the bitterness and focus on the manufacturing part of this country, which helped our country during the period which they call the Industrial Revolution. And he wasn't the only black inventor that did something during that time, but he played a major role in this country's success, even during World War I. So that's my segment for today, brother. So it's back to you if you don't have any questions.
Thank you, Brother George. You know I got one. How can we get our people past the bitterness that we have with each other? That's that mental block, right? The conditioning. How do we get past that to be able to work together to produce the things that we need to sustain ourselves?
Well, I'm going to give the same answer that I always give. We need to flood our young people with the accomplishments, our history, culture, and accomplishments of our people, and form the mindset of a young person to give them a vision of what they should be doing. Because if you don't let a person know what they should be doing, then they subject to do anything, which is what our people do. We do anything now because we don't know what our mission is here on this planet, in this existence. And so we need to flood our young people with the knowledge and pride and wisdom of what we have accomplished as a group of people in the past before we experience the Great Mahafra. So that's my...
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. I like that. Flood our young people. I'm going to tell you one thing. Brothers and sisters, if you're listening to this broadcast live or if you're listening to it on demand, there's some things that we need to do. We need correction for direction, and we need it today. If you are alive and breathing and are a descendant of African-American or African chattel slavery here in America, listen up. We need you, right? Now, there are a whole lot of things going on in this world, right, that our people are attracted and distracted by. Right. Our people love the NFL, love the NBA. We love Michael Jordan. We love Magic Johnson. We love LeBron James. We like the Dallas Cowboys, Washington Redskins. We like knowing what's going on in politics. We're going out and buy the latest car, the latest jewelry, getting to know about the newest and latest television shows or the sitcoms or those close-to-life shows that they have called reality shows. But you got to learn to like yourself. You better learn to like your children, love your family, and you better learn to get to know to love your people before it's too late. Nobody is going to throw an oar or a life raft in for us. We got to do it ourselves. So whatever you need to do to make a commitment to that, that's what we're talking about now. The finger's not pointing at you. Finger is asking you to look at yourself and point you in a direction that helps you to attain a knowledge and a quest for love for self. That's what we are. It's desperate. I'm sounding the alarm right now. Our babies are dying. Our families are crippled, and we have to do something about it. Stop trying to fit in and figure out how to get into your homes, get into the minds and hearts of your children, and lead them in the right direction that they should go in. I'm not preaching today, but we know it's true. Our people are in crisis. And if you're pretending that's not true, come and see the reality of it. It's right in front of our faces. We need help, and the help has to come from home, from yourself, from your heart, from your mind. So I'm just asking you, make a commitment. Go out and get involved in your community. Do something, anything, to help change the path of what's going on. And let's get back to being the great people that we know that we are. And now, without further delay, I got Brother Akebeland coming to you live. He got the juice today, y'all. Tell a friend, come on, this is Empowerment Saturday for African Americans. If you don't do it, who's going to do it? Brother Akebeland, are you there?
Yeah, hold up. Can you hear me?
Hold up, brother. How you
can
doing?
You hear me?
I can hear you.
I hear
yes,
you,
sir.
Mark. All right, we're class has started.
Yeah,
so
I can hear you.
I need everyone to get some paper and a pen to take notes, because I get way out there sometimes, and you think I'm making stuff up, so I want you to substantiate everything that I'm talking about. The title of my book is Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate. Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate. I'm continuing with the aspect of people's culture titled Creativity, which is your arts, music, dance, drama, literature, sculpturing, painting, and all forms of art. As I mentioned last time, art is not for art's sake. It is politically and socially relevant. The problem we have is art for us has been relevant to the European experience. Art for us should be relevant to the African experience. Today, we're going to discuss the works of an African-American artist named Kehinde Wiley. We will also discuss my favorite black movie of all times, the 1939 film, The Wizard of Oz. For those of you not familiar with Kehinde Wiley's works, he painted a picture of President Obama for the Smithsonian Institute's National Portrait Gallery. I was first introduced to Wiley's work when it was exhibiting at the Virginia Museum in Richmond, Virginia. For a black man to have his work exhibited at the Virginia Museum is an accomplishment. However, it wasn't the first time I saw an exhibit at the Virginia Museum by an African artist. I saw the collages of Romare Bearden. Romare Bearden was born in Charlotte, North Carolina. Bearden's family moved to New York when he was a toddler as part of the Great Migration. Bearden never forgot his roots. Bearden brought the African experience to his art. I have a Bearden collage in my home titled Jamming at the Savoy. Bearden, who was light-skinned in complexion and probably could pass for white, was blacker and more connected to his people than Kehinde Wiley. Your Honor, I reprove this through Wiley's own words and his exhibits. In Wiley's painting of President Obama, he strayed away from tradition in portraying a U.S. president with a sense of power. This is usually done by having the president sit or stand at the desk of the Oval Office. Instead, Wiley shows no relationship to President Obama being president of the United States. Obama is sitting in a chair. I can't tell if his feet are grounded because he is surrounded by a bed of flowers. The chrysanthemums reference the official flower of Chicago. The jasmine evokes Hawaii, where Obama spent his life, his childhood. And the African blue lilies stand in for his late father, his late Kenyan father. I can't help but think there are some underlying meanings as well. In Dr. Wilson Bryan Key's book, The Age of Manipulation, He speaks of subliminal seduction, where images are placed below the conscious mind into the subconscious to get you to act. You think you are acting, but actually you are reacting to stimuli being introduced. Therefore, when Mr. Whipple said, "Please, ladies, don't squeeze the charmer," there was an underlining message. When Almond Joy said, "Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't," Peter Paul Almond Joy had nuts, Mounds don't. There's an underlining message. But Michael Jackson said, "Beat it! Beat it!" You better wash your hands after you finish beating it. Therefore, I can't help but think there is some other reason for why they're having President Obama surrounded by a bed of flowers. When I entered the Virginia Museum, I was truly blown away. Wiley's work was huge, and I thought him to be one with extraordinary talent. I looked at one picture after another. At some point, I asked the museum curator if Wiley was gay. She did not know and said she would ask her supervisor. Her supervisor heard me ask the question and yelled, "Yes, he is gay. How did you know?" I responded, "How could I not see?" However, that was not the problem I had. What you do in your bedroom is your business. And there was no clear act of homosexuality in his work. I came to the conclusion based on hand gestures I saw in the painting. The fact that Wiley is gay didn't take away the fact that he is a talented artist. As for his sex life, it was speculative until a supervisor confirmed it. My concern was not those paintings I was looking at that particular moment, but the one I'm about to talk to you, the one I'm going to talk to you about right now. There was a painting by Wiley titled "Napoleon Leading the Army Over the Alps, 2005. Being a lover of art, I immediately recognized the painting. Wiley's painting, Napoleon Leading the Army Over the Alps, is a spinoff of Jacques-Louis David's 1801 portrait, Napoleon Leading the Army. In David's painting, Napoleon is in the saddle of a horse that is standing on its hind legs. The only difference in Wiley's painting and David's painting is David's painting is titled Napoleon Leading the Army. Wiley's painting is titled Napoleon Leading the Army Over the Alps, 2005. But what really disturbed me in Wiley's painting is Napoleon is not the one riding the horse. I repeat, what really disturbed me in Wiley's painting is Napoleon is not the one riding the horse. It is a young black man. This is the same Napoleon and French army that the Haitians went up against in the Haitian Revolution. What Wiley has done is put an anonymous black boy whom he approached on the street as part of his street casting process and put him in the seat of the oppressor. Wiley calls himself positioning young black men in a field of power. Listen carefully. I'm going to say this very slowly. Any African who takes a young black boy, shows him a picture of Napoleon Bonaparte, then puts that boy in the seat of the oppressor and calls it empowering that youth is out of their mind. Wiley could have put that young man in the seat of Bookman Duddy or Desalini or Kristoff. Even Toussaint Overture would have been better than having a young black man in Napoleon's seat. Wiley could have used the familiar picture of Marcus Garvey in his automobile or that of Madam T.J. Walker. Why didn't Wiley do that? He didn't because he failed to divorce Western culture. His models are Europeans. In his own words, he said he was fascinated by imperialist domination. Wiley, no doubt, didn't read Walter Rodney's book, How Europe Undeveloped Africa. We're talking about art. Let's move on to the White House painting. The White House painting was done by a European named Robert McCurdy. McCurdy is also a very good painter. His signet or signature is his paintings look like you just snapped the picture. You can only tell the difference between a photo and his painting by the size. His work can't be scrutinized as much as Wiley's because Wiley did a public painting at Smithsonian. McGurdy did an in-house painting in the White House. I don't think I'll be invited to the White House to get a closer look. Perhaps, Marvin, you'll let me use your White House pass. From what I see online, my only concern with McGurdy's painting is the white background. Wiley tried to give young whites the illusion of power. However, in this case, Obama obtained the highest office in the land. A plain white background doesn't tell it. I can see a young African boy or girl going, who is he, the butler? Let's move down to Hollywood. I'd be curious why I said that my favorite black movie of all time is the 1939 film, The Wizard of Oz. There have been many interpretations of The Wizard of Oz. However, I have not seen an African interpretation. Even if there is an African interpretation, there is no interpretation like the one you are about to hear, unless computers have advanced to the point where it can read my mind. And I don't think they have advanced to that point. I have been watching The Wizard of Oz for over 50 years. And as my mind was open to African culture, I would see something I missed previously. Dorothy ran away from home and came across a Professor Marvel. He said to Dorothy, and I quote, I never do anything without consulting my crystal. This is the same genuine, magic, authentic crystal used by the priests of Osiris and Isis in the days of the pharaohs of Egypt. Stop right there. This was 1939. I just found out who Osiris Isis was 40 years ago, but they knew it in 1939. The movie, The Wizard of Oz, is an adaptation of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, a children's novel written by L. Frank Baum and published May 17, 1900. Baum was a member of the Theosophical Society, founded November 17, 1875, by Madame Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. Blavatsky's teachings were esoteric, therefore symbolic in nature, and restricted to a small group of people who held the spiritual keys. Baum was a member of this group, and the teachers of the Theosophical Society were in The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Blavatsky's first major work and key text in her theosophical movement was the 1877 published work Isis Unveiled, a master key to the mysteries of ancient and modern science and theology. Her work was titled Isis. Who was Isis and Osiris? They were gods and goddesses in ancient Egyptian mythology. Where is Egypt? Egypt is a country on the continent of Africa. Now come with me now as we travel down the yellow brick road to Emerald City. The story starts in Kansas. It ends in Nebraska. But Brother Cavallon, I don't recall seeing Nebraska in the movie. At the end of the movie, the wizard is in a hot air balloon. Written on the face of that balloon is the State Fair of Omaha. Omaha at that time was the capital of Nebraska. Lincoln didn't become the capital of Nebraska until Dishonest Abe was assassinated. I know y'all call him Honest Abe. That's probably because y'all don't know him, but I do. The story starts in Kansas. It ends in Nebraska. Kansas, Nebraska. Kansas, Nebraska. Kansas, Nebraska. The Kansas-Nebraska Act. What was the Kansas-Nebraska Act? The Kansas-Nebraska Act repealed the Missouri Compromise. What was the Missouri Compromise? Missouri had been carved out of the Louisiana Purchase. It applied for admission to the Union. At that time, there were as many slave states as free states. The free states and the slave states each had 22 senators. The admission of Missouri would break the balance. James Talmadge submitted a bill stating that Missouri would be a slave state, but children born to slaves would be free. It says, Talmadge submitted a bill prohibiting bringing any more slaves to the state and granting freedom to children born to the slaves after Missouri is admitted to the Union. This bill was passed in the House, but killed in the Senate. During the next session, Maine applied for admission to the Union. Maine would be free and Missouri a slave state. This little dance became the Missouri Compromise. The people of Missouri felt it was their business to decide about slavery. So they wrote in their new constitution a clause which forbade any free Negroes or mulattoes to enter the state. Before Congress would admit Missouri, a second Missouri Compromise was necessary. It required Missouri not to deny Negro citizens of their constitutional rights. With that understood, Missouri was admitted to the Union in 1821. That stood for 36 years, until a black man named Dred Scott uses the Missouri Compromise to his benefit. Suddenly, the Missouri Compromise is unconstitutional. Scott's owner took him to Illinois, a free state, and then to Fort Snelling in Wisconsin Territory, where the Missouri Compromise had outlawed slavery. Scott sued for his freedom in 1846 and lost. The Nebraska Act, 1854, repealed the Missouri Compromise. It included in a bill that stated popular sovereignty. All questions about slaves and the new territories should be decided by the settlers. Anti-slavery forces attacked the bill. People started coming in Kansas from Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Missouri, and Ohio. The first election in 1855 resulted in victory for slavery forces. Free states claimed more votes were cast than there were people in the state. Why am I taking you down this long road? I'm doing it because when we get back to Kansas, you're going to see a cyclone or a tornado. It is not what is illustrated in the movie. The cyclone or tornado is a code word for a violent confrontation called Bleeding Kansas, 1854 to 1861. The story takes place in Kansas. Dot and her dog Toto live with her Auntie M and Uncle Henry. Toto bites their witchy neighbor, Alvera Gulch. Gulch takes out a court order to have Toto euthanized. Dot runs away from home to protect her dog. On the road, Dot meets Professor Marvel. He convinces her that Auntie M may be dying from a broken heart. Dr. Den heads back home just in time to witness a violent storm. This storm was not a weather storm, but a violent confrontation between the anti-slavery protesters and the slavery protesters, voting up or down on whether Kansas would be a slave state or a free state. There was so much bloodshed that was called Bleeding Kansas. The doctor managed to make it in the house and to her bedroom. She looked out the window to check out the violence and was hit in the head with a brick. She said, "Yeah, who the hell threw that brick?" The next day we know she was out. When she awoke, she was in Munchkin Land. You got to understand the esoteric meaning of these characters. I'll go through them now. The doctor represents common folk. Her dog Toto is a terrier. A terrier would get their prey. If running after a rabbit and he's under the house, a terrier would sit him out. George W. Bush, White House dog, was a terrier, symbolic of his character. When they caught Saddam Hussein, he was in a 6 to 8 foot deep hole. The Munchkins were the little people, the grassroots. They had to depend on big people for food, clothing, shelter, and were paid less than the big people. Sound familiar? They had been enslaved by the Arabs. And now they were enslaved by Europeans, represented by the Wicked Witch of the West, who was more powerful than her sister. Her vast empire was brought to our attention when Professor Marvel said he was visiting the crown heads of Europe. There were four witches in L. Frank Baum's book, but in the movie, there were only three. In the movie, they put the North and South together at the top of your conscious development to form a pyramid. So you have North, South, East, and West. What's missing? North, South, East, and West. What's missing? You got to have a center where you stand. Where is Kansas? Kansas is smack dead in the middle of the United States. Dorothy had Kansas, had Missouri on one side, Nebraska on the other side. She had to decide if she wanted to be slave or she wants to be free. Did she want to be slave or she wants to be free? The ruby slippers. There are no ruby slippers, period. The slippers were silver in the book, and the slippers should be silver on stage. In the movies, it was changed to ruby because ruby was more photogenic alongside the other colors. A history background, because the movie is full of history. During the late 19th century, instead of a strict adherence to the gold standard, supporters wanted to use silver as well, 16 ounces of silver to an ounce of gold. That's where you get the term Oz from. It's short for ounce. Emerald City, which is green, represents fiat money. It has no intrinsic value. It has value only because the society who uses it agrees on its value and trusts that it will be accepted by merchants and other people. You trust that when you give that merchant that dollar bill, you're going to get your goods, and he trusts that dollar bill is backed by something. Dollar heads down the Yellow Brick Road, which is the gold standard. She comes across a scarecrow, which is a code for the straw man. I will now introduce you to the straw man. I asked you earlier to make sure you had paper and pencil in front of you. Take out the pen now. I will introduce you to the straw man. Print your name on a plain sheet of paper. Capitalize the first letter only in your name and the first letter only in your last name. Do so now. Beside that, write your name again. This time, write your name in all caps. The first name, the first one can sign his name. The second one can't because it's in all caps. He doesn't have a brain. The second one is in your wallet. It's on your charge cards and other important papers. Some suggest he is the one responsible for your debt and not you. They also say you can go to court and be set free of the debt he incurred. I'm not saying this will or will not work. All I know, if you do it, you better know it. Because if you don't dot all your I's and cross all your T's, if you slip up, they got you. I don't know anyone who has won, but a person was in court to see three Africans lose. The bailiff brought a brother in to the courtroom, waiting for the judge to call his name. The judge said, John Doe, please stand. The brother didn't move. The judge again said, John Doe, please stand. The brother still didn't move. Then the judge looked at the brother who had prison clothes on and said, are you John Doe? The brother answered, I'm John, capital J, small O, small H, small N, capital D, small O, small E. The judge said, that's what I said, John Doe. The brother responded, I'm John, capital J, small O, small H, small N, capital D, small O, small E. The judge said, all right, we're playing your ballpark. Bailiff, would you please take John, capital J, small O, small H, small N, capital D, small O, small E, to a cell so I can give him 20 years? So I'm not going to push that because whether it works or not, I don't know, but I do know three people that I actually saw with my own eyes lose in the courtroom. The one I'm using is this one here, a straw man argument. A straw man argument is submitting a person's actual position or argument with a distorted view and then arguing against that version that you never made in the first place. Here's an example. Listen carefully. Trump said to his supporters, we'll fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. He also said, I don't know. I know that everyone here will soon be heading to the Capitol building for a peaceful and patriotic make their voices heard. The straw man didn't quote that one. What he told the public was, Trump summoned reporters to wire protests and told them to fight. They did. Fight doesn't necessarily mean a physical altercation. Congressmen fight all the time. Prosecutors know they can't win with a straw man argument. Therefore, they look for witness who would testify on an oath that Trump told them a whole lot more. The straw man went to the wizard for brains. Instead, the wizard gave him a diploma. He gave him a Ph.D., a doctor of psychology. The scarecrow started quoting what he thought was the Pythagoras theorem. It was not. He could have been quoting the formula for Kool-Aid. He wouldn't know. You probably know some people who have Ph.D.s. Albert Einstein said, there's two infinites, the universe and human stupidity. He said he wasn't sure about the universe. The Tin Man. Some said that character is your tax identification number. I think it symbolizes industrialization. The West was one. Tin Man represents the downing of the old West and moving on into industrialization. The Cowardly Lion. He kept saying what he would do if he were king. The lion was William Jennings Bryan, who ran three times for the president of the United States, 1896, 1900, and 1908. He wanted to be king, but lost all three attempts at the presidency. He attacked the gold standard and crusaded around unlimited silver. Bryan, for most of you familiar with the name, was in the scope of monkey trial, barring teachings of evolution in school. He got a spanking in court and a good lesson on the Bible from Clarence Darrow. The Wicked Witch of the West is American legal system. That's your characters until I get to the wizard later. So Dr. and her friends follow the yellow brick road and come across a deadly poppy field. All fell asleep except the Tin Man and Straw Man, because drugs don't affect tin and straw. They get to Emerald City. The wizard said he would grant the Straw Man a brain, the Lion courage, the Tin Man a heart, and send Dr. home if they bring him the Wicked Witch of the West broom. Dr. and her friends encounter the Wicked Witch of the West. The witch puts fire at the end of her broomstick and said to Dalton, the last to go will be the first, will see the first three go before her. Then she sets the straw man on fire. Dalton rushes to protect her straw man by putting out the fire with some water. Some of the water hits the witch and baptizes her. She was liquidated. Dalton and her friends take the witch's broom to the wizard. The wizard reneges on his promise until Toto exposes him from behind the curtain. The wizard was U.S. President William McKinley. His vice president was Theodore Roosevelt. If you read Dorothy from right to left, you see in that name, Theodore. As I mentioned before, at the end of the movie, the wizard is shown in a hot air balloon. The balloon has the words State Fair. Why? McKinley was at the famous 1898 World's Fair. World's Fair were a means to show off the latest inventions moving into the industrial age. The World's Fair the others would model after was the 1893 Chicago World's Fair. They call it White City. They also called the one in Omaha the White City. But the one in Omaha's name was the Trans-Mississippi International Exposition of 1898. The Trans-Mississippi International Exposition of 1898. Trans means crossing the Mississippi. The Old West was one. Now we're crossing over into the industrial age. Omaha, which was founded in 1854, was the gateway to the West. Now, let's argue about which state is the gateway to the West. Missouri and Kansas both claim to be the gateway to the West. Missouri got gangster and said, see that big arch? That proves we are the gateway to the West. That just proves you got bigger guns than they had. That's all that proves. But all three lumped together, consider themselves the gateway to the West. But no doubt, the 1898 Chicago World's Fair, showing all the latest inventions and discoveries, were the gateway of fairs. Back to Oz, the wheels took off prematurely, and Doctor was without a way home. Glinda, the good witch of the North, appealed to Dorothy to tell her the good news. Kansas was a free state. Dorothy said, I got to be free. Glinda responded, you've always had the power to be free, my dear. What have you learned? Dorothy answered, well, I think if I had read Recapture the African Mind by Dr. Bruce Bridges, I would have been free a long time ago. And Glinda said, that's it. Dorothy went home. All her friends she met in Oz were there. The witch was not there because when you control the straw man, the government gets out of your affairs. A little sidebar about Nebraska. Nebraska wanted to join the Union, but had a white-only clause in their state constitution as it relates to voting. It had to be removed before Nebraska was allowed statehood in 1867. Their state motto, equality before the law, reflects Nebraska taking out that clause and allowing blacks to vote. I've come to the close, and I'm going to spell certain names I use because I didn't want to do it while I was speaking because that takes up a lot of time. Kehinde West, you can look it up. Spell K-E-H-I-N-D-E, Wiley, W-I-L-E-Y. Painting is Napoleon leading the army over the Alps, 2005. Roadmap building, his collages. His name is spelled R-O-M-A-R-E, B-E-A-R-D-E-N, Roadmap building. The book about subliminal seduction, the Dr. Wilson Brian Key. Brian spelled B like a boy, R-Y-A-N. Key, K-E-Y, Ph.D. The title of his book is The Age of Manipulation. The guy who did the 1801 portrait of Napoleon leading the army is Jacques-Louis David. Spelled J-A-C-Q-U-E-S. Dash L-O-U-I-S, and last name David, D-A-V-I-D. The man who did Obama's White House painting is Robert McCurdy, spelled capital M, small c, capital C, U-R-D-Y, McCurdy. And ISIS Unveiled, and before you get ISIS Unveiled, you have to read other books first because it's not an easy book to get into. But her name is Madam M-A-D-A-M-E, Helena, H-E-L-E-N-A, Pedrovna, P-E-T-R-O-V-N-A, Blasky, B-L-A, B like a boy, L like a lion, A like an apple, V like a Victor, A like an apple, T like a Tom, S like a sun, K like a sky, K like a kite, and Y like a yellow. I think she might be Russian. That's the end of my presentation, and I could turn the controller meeting back over to our host, Marvin Rong.
Brother George, can you take it from here?
Yes, sir. Brother Kevin Long.
Yes.
Are you still there?
I can't hear y'all. It's a disconnect.
Can you hear me?
It was a long silence for a while, and then.
Yeah, Marvin wants me to take over. All right. Far as, you know, you chose the Wizard of Oz, right? of 1939. What do you see is the difference between the 1939 version and the version that they call the Wiz, you know, with Michael Jackson and Diana Ross? And what do you see as the difference?
Well, I saw that was so long ago. It's just that when I started studying esoteric wisdom and hidden wisdom, and
right.
and stopped studying the Bible, I know that the Jews know our history. So the Bible
right.
is Jewish folklore, but it came from African concepts. So when I look at
right.
certain scripts, if I don't see, recognize who the author is, then I don't really get into it. So I didn't analyze the Wiz as I did the Wizard of Oz, and I doubt very seriously that it would have hidden wisdom meaning in them, but I can't say for sure because I didn't look at the Wizard of Oz for as much as I thought of the Wiz, as much as I've seen the Wizard of Oz, because the Wizard of Oz come every single year. And I expect them to do something shaky. So I don't know about the Oz. I think I saw that once. I've seen Wizard of Oz probably 40 years. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm dealing with art and how it's presented to us from an European perspective, and behind these European things is Africa. Just like, don't throw the Bible away. The underlying of the Bible is Africa, if you understand how it was written. And so I had a whole lot of movies that's European, there's us. And some paintings is directly to seduce us to do that bidding.
Let me see if...
I'm connected.
No, you're still connected. I was checking to see if you had any questions in Slido. And
yep.
Let me see. Okay, I don't see any so far.
But go with what you got there, because I can't get my computer on the check Slido. So go with what you got.
Right. Well, like I said, I don't see any questions that so far.
Go to the phone then.
All right.
Go to the phone then.
Let's see. All right, this is what I'm going to have to do because I don't have access to the phone line. Marvin's has
okay.
access to
I'm
that.
I'm in. Let's see. We got two on the line right now. That's 3347. 3347, are you there? Do you have a question or comment? Three three four seven. Do you have a question or comment? 5416. You're alive. Do you have a question or comment? 5416. All right, there seems to be some other commotion going on with 5416. So that's all we have for the call-in line right now. So I'll try 3347 once again. 3347, are you there?
Well, while we wait, my book deals with all manner of people's culture, history, religion, politics, economics, social order, creativity. What I was discussing now was creativity. And I was going through music, but I'm not going to do that today, right? Probably some other time. You got a lot of subliminal messages in music, and then you got some things that straight up literally out there talk to you that's wrong. Like the OJ's got a song called Love Train. And that song was one of those songs to try to get us together with all this commotion going on in the world today. And in that song it says, tell all the folks in Africa and Egypt and Israel too to get on board. And as if Egypt is not in Africa. So we, some of these songs we sing that are really getting to our minds, because I know people 6 and 7 years old that would tell you they didn't know Egypt was in Africa. You got a little small strip that's connected to Asia. It's a land bridge. That's all. It's just a little bridge. It'd be equated to me living on the north side and having a bridge going to the south side and calling that bridge something else other than me having a bridge from north side going to south side. But there was another song that came out in the 30s. That's my computer making all that noise. That I should go through, but I didn't have time to go through that today too. But of all the subjects that I like best, it would be religion. It would be religion, because when I do religion, most people know the outer Bible. Few don't know the inner Bible. And when I broke that wizard, that's called going below what you see as face value on the screen. Well, in the Bible, there's hidden things in there that you don't see because you're reading it literally. In order to know God, you got no numbers. Because there was a correlation between numbers and God in ancient times. There's only 9 numbers in a cipher. But each time you add 0, it goes on and on and on. So numbers are infinite, and God is infinite. So when people read the Bible, they just read words. I'm counting numbers. You know, so it's deep. It's deep. But that's another subject, right? And I don't want to jump the gun. But if you don't have anything else about the Wizard of Oz or Kehinde Wiley, Kehinde Wiley, and if you got examples of art forms where you see.
Okay. Brother,
clearly,
I got
go ahead.
Dr. Rogers wants to come in for a question. Hold on 1 second, please, sir.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Dr. Rogers. Welcome.
Hello, how are you? Did you hear me?
Doing well, yes, sir.
Brother Marvin, are you able to hear me?
I have a question or comment. Yes, sir.
Yeah, are you able to hear me? Brother Marvin?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, great, okay. Very good job today, my brother. What's the brother's name? I'm sorry, I don't know his name. Brother Marvin?
It's Brother Akebulan.
I was saying, what's the brother's name? I don't know. Huh?
His name
Brother
is
Kebulan. He's on the line.
Kebulan and Kim.
Oh, good. I just wanted to congratulate him. He did a super job looking at some of those subliminal factors. They're very important. In a lot of cases, they are important, as you said, to understand the writer's work. I'm glad he brought in the Theosophical Society's interpretation into these writings. And Madame Blavatsky and what she did. I've been a member of the Theosophical Society for probably about 20 years. And, I study at a camp here in Milwaukee. It's called the Milwaukee Camp. You know, the headquarters is out in Wheaton, Illinois. But anyway, a lot of very critical work out of there. So it's something I wanted to ask him. A lot of the Harlem Renaissance writers had begun to move to that esoteric method of telling their stories. One particular was Jean Tuma. Tuma used that esoteric writing. He was a very good friend of Madame Blavatsky at the time. And I wanted to ask the brother, had he heard that? Did he know that? For a fact, he wrote the book Cain. And if you read Cain, Cain is clearly a theosophical philosophy writing. And so I wanted to ask him, what had he heard about that? And then there's one other Harlem Renaissance area person that used that as well to sort of display their work. But let me ask you first about that connection between the Harlem Renaissance and the
First of all, I'm glad you're contributing. and you mentioned Theosophical Society, right? I think the first time I got, don't quote me on that, I vaguely remember getting that book, Isa Unveiled, from at the bookstore, No Bookstore, I believe. I know I got Annika Lister's there, but I think I got Isa Unveiled there too, or at least some else got it, gave it to me, right? But if you study ancient Egyptian wisdom, right, it's coded. When you go to Kemet, and I'll get back to you, don't let me forget to get back to your point about Harlem Renaissance, right? When you go to ancient Egyptian, okay, it's coded. When you see Carl Jung and Sigmund Freud, you'll find out they studied in Egypt. So in Egypt, yes, I said, yes, you can see through walls, right? What that means is I got a hieroglyphic picture in front of me, a hieroglyphic picture in the back. It's really called metaneta, but I got a hieroglyphic in front of me, hieroglyphic in the back of me, hieroglyphic in the north, east, south, and west of me, and seeing through walls, right, means that I can put all the pictures together, right, and read it. Is that spookism? Is that spookism, right? So that's what we did. Right. We did stuff like this. So we said a sun could mean light, knowledge, wisdom, intelligence. What a European did was put it in English and took the S-U-N and wrote S-O-N. So what I'm doing is taking these stories, right, and give you the hidden meaning of these stories. I'm not giving anything new. They know the code, but we don't know the code. Exactly. Now, but the Harlem thing, I'm glad you brought it up because you said something that I did not know. But what I do know is you got jazz musicians in Harlem. They all got together, right? They all got together to deal with the social ills in the community. Just like the musicians got together saying, we are the world. They get together for certain things, right? Well, I found out recently the artists did the same thing. I think it was Robert Beard and some artists got together, and they was going to get, he said, go ahead and get some clippings for collages, right, and put it on a piece of paper. We could put it all together. So these were people who took their art and understood the art is not just for art's sake. Gil Scott Heron understood that. The revolution not be televised. Or no knock laws. Go ahead, brother. Go ahead, speak.
Those jazz writers, those jazz musicians, because actually it was Alice Coltrane that led John Coltrane into that transcendental music. because you remember it was Alice that played that harp. And I used to know her drummer named Rashid Ali.
Mm-hmm.
And told me that she was very heavy. She led John into it, trying to help him get off some drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how even John got into it so deeply. And a lot of them used that method, you know, to try to do that during that period of time, you know. I got one other question I want to ask you. Have you ever ran across this? Now, when it comes to the Wizard of Oz, what I heard is that was a political campaign. It was done by the progressives who were trying to get gold to be used as a standard of wealth by the rural farmers. And that they had a man that was going to run for president that was going to help them do it, whose name was William Jennings Bryan. And Bryan was a powerful orator. And that's why in the Oz, he speaks so loud, and he was powerful. And so everybody would go running to Bryan's to listen to him speak. Did you hear that analogy as well in terms of
when you said that, you make me think you must miss the first part of my program, because that's all I talked about. I said William Jennings Bryan was for the gold standard. William Jennings Bryan was for silver standard. William Jennings Bryan was for silver standard, and Will McKinley was for the gold standard.
There you go. And the wicked witches of the West were for the gold miners of California, and the wicked witches of the West were the New York bankers, weren't they?
Those who were oppressed people, right? The whole story is about the gold standard and the silver standard. See, they want the silver standard, 16 ounces of silver equal to an ounce of gold. And what happens is, if it don't work, the society might crash. So people want something that's stable. We know the gold is standard. We know it's stable. So what McKinley did was he stuck with the gold standard. And what William Jennings Bryan did, he He wanted to do the silver standard.
Right.
And he lost. But he lost three times. He ran for office three times. So the whole movie is about the gold and silver standards. That's what it basically is about.
Right.
You got to look at the movie
really
and find out what year Vaughn wrote the book. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just saying, I appreciate your presentation. So you brought
I gave factual, although I did an African twist on it because everything I do African twist on it. If I listen to a song about European, I'll put an African spin on it. I always do that, right? But the dates I gave are accurate. The instances I gave is accurate. Those are accurate.
Right.
It was a gold and silver standard during that time period, and you got Will McKinley, and you got Will McKinley and what's that name? And William J. Bryan was at the 1898 World's Fair. And then they campaigning. And so all that's historical. Just because when you
And after,
like John
Hill Clark
said, you got to
that's during the connection to Africa, because it was actually the connection in there. The Russians, were very heavy into that esoteric writing, and there's a city up in Wisconsin called Ripon, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to send, there was a Russian guru, I can't think of his name now, it starts with a Z, and it's a very long name. Everybody used to go up there to visit him to get readings.
Mm-hmm.
And he was dark, but he was Russian, he was dark complexion. But that's that African-Russian connection, because everybody knows there's a real heavy connection between Africa and Russia.
Well, they said the same thing about Madame Velasco. They said the same thing about her.
Yeah, right.
I think she's from Russia.
Yeah. And right here, Russian Jew. Just like the same woman that ran the library on 135th Street in Harlem, at what we now know as the Schomburg. The woman that orchestrated that library is a Russian Jew. You know, her name was Ernestine Rose, and she's a Russian Jew. And she brought in all kind of stuff that they would have never heard. And she ended up becoming a very good friend to Arthur Schomburg.
All right.
So you were on it. That whole intellectual history is extremely important for us to our people to try to understand what's going on right now.
Yeah,
you know, we look at
the
Russian, that whole Russian, Romanian. I said, those Romanians are black.
Mm-hmm.
These are African people.
Take it back to history, right? We was in our plantation singing, right? We weren't just singing. We were sending messages.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I'll tell you something else, too. You probably remember the DAP. We was in school, we did the DAP. That's a language.
Right,
the DAP.
Right.
We did the DAP in school, DAP. Give us some DAP, man.
Yes.
I asked the brother, what was it? Oh, man, we just shaking heads. Nah, brother, I'm heading for class, and somebody said, give us some DAP, man. Sometimes DAP will last 3 minutes. You ain't just shaking hands, you speaking. I know the code. I'm not going to say it on his phone. But it was a language. And the problem I have now is people get on TV and get a DAP to anybody. It wasn't for everybody.
Right.
It wasn't for everybody. So when President Obama gave the DAP on TV, I looked at him, what? Does he know what that means?
He
don't know what it means, or he knows what it means, or our culture has been weaved within this Western culture, and now it doesn't have the same meaning that we had originally. The DAP was a code. If you did it in Vietnam, if you did the DAP, you got an Article 15, because they didn't know what you was talking about. So a black officer and a white officer come in the room, and the white officer, what do you do when you see two officers? A 10-shot. Then the black officer go to Georgia and say, give me some DAP, man. He said, what are you doing? He said, I know we're officers, but there's a different language between me and the brother. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So all that's part of our culture.
Right.
So code language is nothing new.
I got you. Yeah.
But if you know who you are, when they're doing it, you can pick their code out.
Exactly. Have you ever looked at Sterling Stuckey as it relates to some of the art and music and literature comparing it to culture?
Well, I got Sterling Stuckey on with Lester Miller interviewed him, and I got Sterling Stuckey in John Henry Clark's book But since you brought it to my attention, I will do, because I got the book right in front of me.
Take a look at that. You'll find that interesting. Yeah.
All right, good. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much, Brother Marvin.
Yeah, Brother Kevin, are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
You can hear me? Okay. Brother Marvin had an emergency, so I'm going to, you know, help to close out the show. But what I would like for you to do is I would like for you to, like, many of us heard of the Dred Scott case, but if you could kind of just talk about that, you know, the relationship between the Kansas Nebraska Act and Dred Scott.
Missouri was a slave state. Missouri was a slave state. But part of that compromise, was certain surrounding areas. Don't quote me on it, but I don't know what areas was for be free. So what happened was when Dred Scott's owner is taken from one place to another, then if you're free, you're free. And so he, Dred Scott, I guess he couldn't read. He had an attorney represent, like most will have an attorney represent, then the actually supposed to be free. So now, according to the Missouri Compromise, he was supposed to be free. But they said it was unconstitutional. And what Taney said, Judge Taney said something about the founders of the Constitution didn't apply to us when it comes to citizenship. Well, I know it's in the paper. They don't say according to the U.S. Constitution, black people are not tied to the rights. They can't say that because nowhere in the United States Constitution is the word slave until you get to the 13th Amendment. There was no slave in the Constitution. There's no black in the Constitution. There's no Negro in the Constitution. So they can't say according to the United States Constitution. What you can say was the founding fathers intend for Negroes to be slaves.
Okay.
But in the Constitution, I take a position that you probably need the 13th Amendment. Because if you read the Constitution literally, there's no African in there, there's no Negro in there, there's no color in there, right? And use a term like free person, something like that. Use that terminology, right? And those not free. I would have to say you're talking about me. But I wouldn't say that. In today's society, looking at it, I wouldn't say that because you got people today who ain't free. You know what I mean? And back then you had some Europeans who were slaves also. So I won't take that position, right? But Dred Scott went to court, and they all of a sudden made the Missouri Compromise unconstitutional, and he lost his case.
Right.
He lost his case. Yeah. But for reference, so people look it up, look up the Missouri Compromise, look up the Kansas-Nebraska Act, look up the Omaha Fair of 1898, look that up, and look up Dred Scott and Judge Taney. So although I gave an after twist to the Wizard of Oz, I gave you historical accuracies. I gave you actual historical dates. When I said Omaha was founded in 1854, that's when it was founded, 1854. Another thing, too,
right,
you might want to look up. You always started because Missouri, Louisiana Purchase. And Louisiana Purchase had something to do, as in my memory bank somewhere, it had something to do with the Haitians' victory over France.
I could be wrong.
Maybe you know, George. Say it again.
Yeah, France went, no, it was right. You're right. When they spent so much money trying to defeat Toussaint Overture, and when they lost, then, you know, the country was basically bankrupt. So they had their portion of the United States, which they possessed at that time, they supposedly possessed it, and they sold that to the United States for a certain amount of money, and that was called the Louisiana Purchase.
Yeah, so they started dividing Europe, and so Missouri came out of that. I don't know whether Nebraska and I don't know what other states came out of that. They carved Missouri Compromise. They carved Louisiana Purchase in order to get, Omaha? No, Missouri.
Yeah, Missouri, right.
But I don't know what other states came out of that new land of purchase. Yeah, so our history is there.
Right.
So right. I ain't want to take it that far in the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't I haven't studied to figure out how all the rest of those other states formed, but I do know, you know, that they had that the Sooner situation in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how our people ended up in Oklahoma, because we ended up staking out some land, and, you know, they forced us to stake out the poorest land. They, you know, we went out there trying to get the nice green lush land. They said no. So we ended up staking out some land that was, you know, mostly rocky. And when they started, you know, to get the rocks, you know, clear the rocks, they ended up striking oil. And so that's how the Black Wall Street got started in the first place.
And see, and our history is in the, I'm glad you said our history is in these stories. That's what I'm trying to bring about. When you and I were in school, we read 10 Little Indians. But a lot of us don't know, but we got 10 Little Indians as a compromise. They had 10 Little Niggas at first. They had changed it to 10 Little Indians. So we don't know the history. So we read these books, right? I'm just saying there is always something behind what you're given. Art is not for art's sake. You know, they pushed in political agenda. We read what's that? Hansel and Gretel? That's another forbidden fruit story. They just changed it to gingerbread.
I think I was more afraid as a child of Hansel and Gretel than I was the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah.
Hansel and Gretel was a scary story to me. Ain't that when somebody melted or something like that inside a pot or something?
And then subliminal seduction is not just visual. It's also what you listen to, what you hear. Yeah.
Right.
So, like the Beatles, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, LSD. Yellow Submarine was a downer.
Yeah.
When I was in school and Rick James said, "I'm in love with Mary Jane," I thought he was talking about guilty jilt to him. I didn't know he was talking about marijuana.
He needs to.
Look up your sister online, right, before I go. Look up your sister online. Her name is Julia Lee. She came out with a song called The Spinach Song in the 1949, I think. It's called The Spinach Song. Listen to her, right? She's not talking about spinach. She's talking about marijuana. She said her boyfriend came to her house. He turned her on to some spinach. Now, I've seen guys turn women on to a whole lot of things, but I know spinach. You listen to the song, you realize she's talking about marijuana.
Right.
That's my whole point of this presentation, is that art, music, dance, drama, literature, right, is not just for entertainment. It's a political and social thing going on through these mediums.
Well, let me ask you this. Because you know that sometime soon we're going to want to bring you back. Did you do a movie analogy of the Black Panther?
Yeah, I mentioned that last week, right? I got more than I'm gonna give you now, right? But the powerful person in the Black Panther, the one with all power, is the white guy. Because in these movies, right, they always got to be your savior. He's the only one in there, basically. He's the only one in there. And he controls the sky. He controls the heaven. He's in the airplane.
Yeah,
I mentioned last week. If you're in the military and you want high ground, he's in the airplane. Air Vance is on the ground. If you got 1,000 people on the ground with weapons, and I got one person in the air with a single engine jet, and he got guns, I take that one person in the air with a single engine jet anytime.
Right.
So, but Black Panther is a good movie, but yeah, I did break that down.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe you can pick up on that. You know, do Black Panther the next time you you interview.
Well, I really want to do all aspects of people's culture, because right now that's creativity. I want to also do a politics, economics, social order, religion.
Okay.
Yeah, all those areas are. See, we have been attacked in all manner of people's cultures. So you just can't be versed in economics. You got to be versed in economics, politics, social order, creativity, spiritual. You got to be versed in all those things, because they are attacking us in all those things. So Francis
right.
Quest Weldon said, if money was just our problem, we straight. We got plenty of money. If poverty was our problem, we straight. We got a black president. That because we have been attacked at all manner of people's cultures. Some people versed in one area and not versed in another area. So I try to be versed in all manner of people's cultures to be whole.
Right.
At about time you close up, brother.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, it was a great learning lesson for me. You know, every time I listen to you, it's a great learning lesson for me, brother, you know. And, you know, I thought the show went great today. Sorry that, you know, Brother Marvin had an emergency, you know, and he just had to, you know, address. And, you know, so I really thank you, you know, for your presentation today.
Thank you too, brother. Thank Brother Rogers for calling in.
Yes.
And whoever else called in.
Yes. Well, brother, I guess that's it. And until next time, you know.
You got the music closes out, Wolf?
Yes, sir. It's on now.
I got you. Forward.
Yes. Forward, brother.